Hello, everyone. Welcome to Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Willie Morales. And on today's show, I have Yael Tamar. Did I pronounce your last name right? Tamar?
Yeah, Yael Tamar.
Okay, great. And she is the CMO and partner at Solid Block. So, Yael, tell us a little bit more about yourself and how did you get into this business?
Sure. Thank you, William, for having me on the podcast.
No, really, it's my pleasure.
Yeah. So the reason I got into this business of connecting blockchain and real estate is basically through my desire to invest in real estate products. And, you know, I grew up, you know, thinking that you have to work really hard, save some money, buy an apartment, and then, you know, kind of maybe buy another one. And then I discovered through the world of online media and books that a lot of people are investing in real estate right and left and living a totally different lifestyle. So, you know, the first move for somebody who wants to invest in real estate is, okay, thinking, okay, what will I invest in? Which projects are even available to me? How do I even access these great opportunities that people seem to have? That's number one. Number two is, where do I get the financing? You know, do I need to bring $100,000 to the table? And the final is, you know, even if I do, can I even invest in some opportunities that require me to be an accredited or otherwise known sophisticated investor? So there's many, many complexities in this. And it seems like this world is limited to a select group of people or institutions. And so my desire was to first educate myself on how to become an investor. Second is to find great projects to invest in. And third, find projects that I can invest in smaller amounts of money and not have to be a sophisticated investor. And, you know, those are really, really hard to come by. So when combining all of these hurdles and challenges, there's really not much for me to go by. So I fortunately come from the tech background, even though I am a marketing professional. Within the tech space for the last 10 years, I've also been an entrepreneur and I had several fintech startups. And the latest one had basically some blockchain aspects to it. So I was pretty savvy with blockchain. I've been consulting companies in the blockchain space for 3 years. And then, you know, I said, well, why don't we use blockchain to facilitate investments in real estate projects, investments and trading, right? So even if I can't invest in a project when it just started out, maybe I can buy parts of this project later on. So yeah, that's how I got into it.
So if you could explain for my audience, what is the core of blockchain? Because I love the premise of what you just said, where people could try to get in with little amounts of money, which I understand, because I think one of my first deals that I got before I bought brick and mortar was investing in a real estate trust and then doing a crowdfunding site. So, but with blockchain, I see that it's, you know, it's a little bit more, for lack of a better word, for our end, more complex. But it seems from your end, you could explain it better. How can someone learn more about this particular vehicle?
No, absolutely. I think people should definitely get educated on what blockchain is. But even if they don't fully understand it, they shouldn't feel bad, because I'm pretty sure that they can't explain all the nuances of how the internet works, or how Google Calendar works. You know, you don't necessarily need to be a developer to enjoy all of these great technologies.
True.
However, obviously, people need to understand things like safety on the internet. Is it safe to enter my credit card information? And so on and so forth. So the same thing comes to blockchain. So in very, very simple terms, blockchain is a way to transfer money or information without an intermediary on top. Now, I'll give you an example, William. If I had, let's say I wanted to buy your ebook and it cost me $100. So I want to give you, to pay you $100. I could, you know, in the normal non-corona times, I can buy a plane ticket, maybe, you know, drive to your house, give you $100 bill.
Right.
Most people don't do that. So they'll probably either do a bank transfer or a Venmo or PayPal or whatever. Right. And all of those involve an entity. You know, a bank will take $100 from me and subtract it from my balance. and your bank will take $100 and add it to your balance, because there is this agreement between the banks. And almost most people don't know, if it's an international transaction, there's also five banks that are going to be intermediaries in between me and you. And that's why it costs a lot of money. So you're probably not going to, you know, to send you $100, I have to probably actually send you $200 worth of Israeli shekels, because I'm in Israel right now.
Right. Okay.
So, and that's insane, right? So that's what happens. Now, if with Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, that basically was the first use case of blockchain, we don't need an intermediary up on top, because there's a network of computers all over the world, you know, as computers or some sort of hardware or software that are verifying data and are verifying that my balance is reduced by $100 and your balance is increased by $100 worth of Bitcoin or whatever cryptocurrency you're using. Right. So that was a revolutionary concept that eventually people are hoping that Bitcoin will be a store of value, right? You put money in it and it retains value. So eventually that's where we hope that it's going to go. Now, after Bitcoin, a lot of companies realized, wow, we can use this underlying mechanism of blockchain to do other things, specifically anything that has to do with transactions and trade. And that's where a lot of markets that deal with, you know, currency transaction or payments across borders, they jumped on the opportunity. Every single bank is using blockchain for interbank transfers now. Even if they're charging you money like they used to, they're all using it. So blockchain is really widely used. People don't know it because it's behind the scenes, just like the internet is used for everything today, right?
Right.
So then in real estate, there's lots and lots of applications, not only what we're doing with investments, but just very simply putting titles on blockchain. And a lot of countries have done that. And that definitely helps transactions. You lower the time of a real estate transaction from several days to just a few hours. So because you have this immutable ledger of data, underlying data that you can easily verify and transfer from one individual to the other. So in our world of real estate transactions, they're not happening between milestones. You know, the initial milestone is I want to do a project now, or I want to sell my property. So that's when I need to do a transaction, right? I'm getting the money and I'm transferring the asset, or I am starting to build an asset. And then at the end of the project, I am returning the money to investors with profit, hopefully. And maybe this property is going to be yielding. Maybe somebody's going to, you know, come in and change the capital stack. So that's pretty much where it's going. But there could be a lot of transactions in between, because people may want to come in and out when they see opportunities elsewhere. They want to become liquid, take the money out, put it somewhere else. Or on the other hand, if I know that there is a great opportunity right now, and let's say investing in medical real estate in Berlin, right, and there is no project that is happening, but there are many projects that are in the middle, I may be able to replace an existing investor who will sell their shares to me. And that's not happening in this right now. And there is a great opportunity in that blockchain coupled with regulation that is now allowing private securities trading. That hasn't always been that way. In the US, that's a new regulation from 2012, called the Jobs Act. So that regulation together with the blockchain is actually enabling us to do these transactions.
Oh, I love that. I want to touch on a couple of examples because in your profile, you talk about it's digital securities backed by real estate and other assets. And we'll touch base on what the other assets are. But for example, Yael, if I want to deal with the owner, right? Let's say I see a for sale by owner property and he's willing to sell it to me. Let's say I give him his asking price. Let's say $100,000. And he's willing to take monthly payment. Let's say a down payment of $5,000. I'm just throwing a number at. And so I owe him $95,000 over 10 years. So let's just come up with that number. Mm-hmm. Does blockchain can facilitate that type of structure between me and the owner, and I don't have to go through the conventional route where the owner says, no, let's work us two together. Do I need a lawyer to draw up the paperwork? How would that, like for someone like me, which is my niche, trying to get into owner financing, creative financing, how does blockchain come into play with that, if I made sense at all?
Oh, of course, you definitely made sense. So with blockchain, any transaction can be facilitated, whatever you want to structure it as, you can structure it. And the only thing that I have to mention is that really the process that I described is called tokenization, which tokenization of real estate, where you convert real estate into tradable financial product. Okay. Now, because it is a financial product, essentially it's a security, you're now going into the space of securities regulation, like the SEC in the United States. So I most likely the property that's been tokenized is going to be at this time valued higher than $100,000, just because the underlying processes of security issuance are more expensive. I think with time, we're going to get there where it's not going to cost that much to tokenize a home. And then technically, if somebody wants to sell you a portion of their home, or maybe they need, you know, they don't want to sell their whole house because they want to pay off some of their debts, let's say $20,000. They shouldn't have to sell all of their house and lose years and years of mortgage payments, for example. They should just be able to tokenize their house and sell, let's say, in payments, like you said, also over a period of time, or just sell $20,000 worth of their house. And there is no reason people shouldn't be doing that. People should be doing that. But right now, what the majority of the projects are $5 million US dollars and up, which means these are usually multifamily or commercial properties, just because the underlying cost of issuing a security is a little bit high, because you have to do, in fact, legal work, legal and compliance. You have to do a mini prospectus, what's called a private placement memorandum, you know, and as you know, legal work is expensive. So that's why it's a little bit, but I think when we have templates and when we have this, as you know, after there's been hundreds of these assets tokenized, I think prices are going to go down, and you'll see single home tokenizations as you described, and then sky's the limit.
Okay, so this is basically multifamily enough. So with that advent of that coming into play, so can the non-accredited investor get into these type of projects? Is there a minimum that they could invest in? Because we see, you know, websites like, and I'm not endorsing anyone, like Fundrise Realty Shares and things like that. Is blockchain, is that like the same type of component where someone, let's say, like my sister says she has, you know, $1,000, she wants to invest in some project. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's definitely possible. So we'll have to go under crowdfunding regulation.
Okay.
And unfortunately, that's limited for non-accredited investors, at least in the amount. Like you said, it's either $1,000 or, in general, I think the rule of thumb is no more than 10% of your annual income or your net worth. If you're making over, I think it's either $37,000 a year or something like that, because then the minimum is like $2,000. So, and you can invest, you know, depending on your income, up to $100,000. So there are definite limitations, because the SEC wants to protect regular citizens from, you know, unauthorized security products. So, you know, so it's limited right now. However, there's also a new regulation that's a little bit more expensive to obtain. For larger projects where you can raise up to $75 million from individual unaccredited investors, where limitations are much, much lower. So it's almost like going public, but without the rigorous reporting requirements and things like that. So we're going there. So I'm hoping that we're also going to get that regulation, specifically because we're going into several affordable home projects where we really want to help people become owners of their homes, and pay as you go, as you described, you know, this pay as you go scheme. So that's where we want to go, and I think the regulation is going to allow us to do that eventually.
Well, yeah, I hope so, because I think people do want to get into real estate, but like you mentioned earlier, you know, when am I going to get the money? Oh, I need 20% down. I need 25% down. I'm going to have to partner with someone that has the money. So I think it's just, I think if there's a chance to include other people, that'll be a great thing. So besides real estate, what other assets are, like you mentioned, digital securities backed, right? It's backed by real estate, but what is considered other assets?
So there have been some attempts to do this for commodities and things like art, for example. And also you can, of course, back it by equity. So there's private equity companies, you know, startup companies, you can tokenize them in the same way. So, you know, and trade in between different financing rounds. And a lot of people have demand for startup products between the rounds. And you see people are trying to get into different projects, like, for example, SpaceX, before they go and do an IPO. And so I think that's a very interesting value proposition to be able, you know, some people want out, some people want in, the same thing. And there are a limited amount of marketplaces for private equity products. They start to pop up. We specifically are focused on real estate at the moment. Maybe green energy infrastructure, which also goes under real estate. There's a lot of work to do in real estate, so we're happy to be focused on that.
So is this type of investment or assets, does it include like warehouses, shopping malls, what do you call it, mobile homes? Is that all included in the real estate type of asset? It doesn't have to be, let's say, just multifamily. It could be, like I said, warehouses, storage units, things like that.
A business. It can be a business, you know, based on real estate, of course. Okay. So because the investor comes into, is getting basically interest in participation in the profits of the real estate business, like commercial real estate, for example, a hotel or a shopping mall, what it may be.
So what's happening around the world today with the pandemic? Has it affected business in any way for you guys, or has it been business as usual?
So in two ways, in positive and negative. And for negative, of course, a lot of people are reluctant to invest right now in whichever way, shape, or form.
Right.
But positive impact that I see is that people are not traveling. You know, you cannot travel to London, let's say, to buy London-based properties. So people are looking for ways to invest online when they hear about certain things. So a report came out today from JLL that basically stated that there's actually been quite positive effect right now, surprisingly, on London real estate, partially connected with Brexit. Also, people are comparing things, comparing economies, you know, they have to put their money somewhere. So, and then there are places that are doing much, much worse than London. So apparently people are reshuffling money, putting them into what they think is stable. And so we sometimes we don't even know which forces are playing in the market.
Right.
So I think that with COVID, people are more open to doing things online. There's digital transformation across the sectors, and real estate has been forced into this digital transformation. It's a very traditional industry, but people are learning to do things online,
which I think it's a good thing.
I'm doing an open house today for a property in Mexico through virtual reality, which is like fantastic.
Oh, you know? I love that. That's great. So talk more about, you founded the Women in Block Global Network. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. So basically that's Women in Blockchain. I felt like we need a lot more exposure in the industry, and specifically for speaking opportunities. You know, sometimes you go to a conference and you see what we call these manels, which are all men panels. And
I never heard that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. You know, and you're like, oh, and you're like, couldn't they find a woman somewhere who knows about this subject? So I started doing these events offline and online, and inviting both men and women, but just making sure there's always a woman on stage and women speakers and so on and so forth. Just 50-50 at least. And then people are surprised. You're like, oh, wow, there's a woman expert in international taxation of real estate. And they're like, oh, wow, there's a woman expert in fintech. And we didn't know they existed. They're very rare. So I just wanted to show everybody that we're not rare And it's just that sometimes I think women may need a little more, a little less modesty and a little more, you know, push towards exposure and opportunities. In general, I think that most people would agree with me that if you go and you ask a guy, can you speak on such and such topic? And if he knows nothing about the topic, he'll figure out, okay, well, I'll prepare. How many days do I have to prepare? Oh, okay. I have a week. No problem. I'm going to go read up on it, talk to a few experts, you know, and I'll wing it. And a woman is going to be like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not really, you know, like stuff like that. So,
that is so true. I definitely can't argue that point. That's because I'm going to be honest with you. I've done that where I'm like, okay, yeah, this is okay. You know what? Let me read up on it a little bit because I haven't done this investment, but I could, you know. So sorry, people, but yeah, most
yeah, do that. Exactly. But,
so also you're a co-chair of Fibri.
Yeah.
Talk more about that.
So Fibri is an international organization of real estate and blockchain professionals with over 3,000 members. And I am the co-chair of it for Israel, which means that I represent the organization in Israel, and I organize events where we increase awareness of different blockchain solutions for the real estate space. There are different working groups within the organization that are related to either tokenization or what's called a unique property identifier, mm-hmm. or titles, just various degrees or transactions, just various degrees of you know, real estate, various things within the real estate realm. And so that's what the organization does, brings awareness, creates solutions, promotes solutions. And so actually once a year, there is a full report on the state of blockchain with real estate distributed, going to be distributed in July this year. Mm-hmm. So I invite everybody to come check it out if you want to learn more. No, I also have a course on real estate and blockchain that's running on Cointelligence. So if anybody's interested,
more about that.
I'm really passionate about the subject, and I think that every day I hear from different people different ideas, and I kind of shamelessly take them on and say, you know, oh, we can do this. And they're asking me, this is another thing. So today somebody is asking me, can you tokenize tax credits for opportunity zones? And like, why not? We can at least try. So the short answer is yes. The long answer is we haven't figured it out, but we will. So then I decided to take all the research that we're doing and all the work that we're doing, the hands-on, and put it in practice in like a very hands-on course online where real estate people can really come and listen and get a lot of ideas. Whether you're going to tokenize your asset or not, you're going to get a lot of ideas around it. Also, I talk about valuation. I talk about taxation. I talk about regulation, all of this stuff that is definitely going to help you raise money globally, whether you do this through blockchain or not.
And what's that site? And so I could definitely add that to the show notes.
Yeah. So I'm doing this via Cointelligence Academy, and I'll give you a link okay. to that.
Great. Yeah. That's fine. You know, I wanted to backtrack before I let you go. With the, you know, you're talking about different types of asset class, especially in real estate, and the need for, I guess, for lack of a better word, a lawyer. Now yeah. are lawyers involved in this type of process, especially, let's say I'm dealing with you or I'm dealing with another blockchain professional, and I'm looking to buy a building that's worth $10 million. How do we educate the lawyer on this? Because like you said, it's not exactly out there for all of us to know. And that's why I thank you so much for doing this show, because we're learning more and more as I talk to you. Where does a lawyer fit into this scheme?
So when we're doing a deal, we bringing in a lawyer to prepare what's called a PPM. Okay. And that's a traditional process, a plain vanilla security transaction. Okay. As far as the lawyers are concerned. So we have several lawyers, and say one of them is specializing in US based securities, US securities law. So he's drafting the private placement memorandum, also forming an SPV. We have a lawyer specializing in taxation that's creating a tax, basically a taxation vehicle or process and so mm-hmm. on. Those are, you know, just the lawyers that generally come from this industry. Now, on top of that, obviously each investor has to make their own decision and do their own due diligence on the project. Even though Solid Block is performing due diligence, both financial and real estate, but of course each investor has to be informed. So let's say you are an investor, and so most likely what you're gonna, the most important part for you is to do your due diligence on several aspects, like the taxation. So you have to talk to your accountant before investing in anything, especially if it's outside of the US, to make sure that there's no double taxation, to make sure there's taxation treaties. So drop a note to your accountant asking, you know, what you can expect. And in terms of being able to read a private placement memorandum, it's pretty much accessible to any investor out there. You can probably read and understand most of it. Right. If you do have a lawyer that, you know, gives you advice, you can obviously consult them on the document, and of course evaluate the opportunity from the point of view of the market that. And we are providing, by the way, a lot of data also on the market where the asset is located, on the advantages of investing in that market, different trends. Like I said, we're doing a property right now. We're doing actually a fund in London, residential, first ever single family residential tokenized fund in London. And so, you know, we're obviously giving our investors all of the information, including, let's say, this new report that just came out about the London-based real estate.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, Yael, if I pronounce that, if I butcher your name, please, I am so sorry.
I like it. Maybe I'm going to start using it.
Okay. Well, anyway, listen, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. If somebody wanted to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Just Google me and you'll find any of my social media. I'm very responsive. If you'd like to email me at yael@solidblog.co, that's also a way, you know, LinkedIn, okay. Facebook, TikTok, whatever you fancy.
We'll find you. Well, Yael, listen, I appreciate, again, taking time out of your busy schedule. You gave us so many great nuggets to learn, and definitely the show notes are going to be packed with information. Thank you so much.
Thank you, William. Thanks for having me.
No problem. My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, everyone, that was Yael Tamar. She's the CMO and partner at Solid Block. You can find her at yael@solidblock.co. That's yael@solidblock.co. Yael, thank you so much for being on today's Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. Really appreciate it. You can find me at peer2peerrealestate.com. That's peer2peerrealestate.com. Check out our past shows, our blog, our resource page. Hopefully, we're looking to update the website either July or August. Please go to Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe, leave a review, tell us how we can make this show better. And before I go, guys, just a couple more things. Do not give up on your dreams. Fight for it, protect it, guard it, don't let anyone talk you out of it. And I really believe if you keep the momentum going, good things will happen. Anyway, on behalf of Peer-to-Peer Real Estate, I'm William Morales. Until next time, thanks, everybody, and please stay safe. Bye.